Yes.
Okay.
Good. So, right. What is our title going to be?
What is our title going to be? It's going to be go.
Oh, he's such a character.
Get ready for, you know. Character study. Do it or not. Oh, I don't know.
Do it or not.
I don't know.
Like he's such a character.
He's such a character.
He's such a character. Okay.
Hopefully. He's such a
character. Hopefully, he's such a character. We hope. Is that better?
He's such a character, we hope.
He's such a character, we hope. Okay.
Sure.
All right. Sure. All right. Hi, I'm Dave Dufour.
I'm John Schaup.
And I'm Marcia Fulmer, and we are Theater Geeks.
Hi, welcome to episode 8 of Theater Geeks. He's such a character, we hope. Good episode. Hey, what we want to talk about today is character development and what you do to prepare. By the way, joining us again this week is Deirdre Lovejoy, who also has the distinct honor of being Marcia's daughter. Has been an actress for a number of years, appeared in shows like Law and Order, and was a regular on The Wire on HBO, plus a lot of Broadway and regional theater experience as well. So welcome again, Dee Dee.
I'm happy to be an honorary geek.
She's an honorary geek, that's right.
And she started off in community theater.
That's true. Remember Dee Dee doing community theater out at the Bristol Opera House, and... Right.
She was a little no-neck monster in Cat on a Hot Tin Roof. Right, right.
I don't remember that because I don't think I saw that one. But I remember.
Probably
I remember,
before
I remember
your
you
time,
were one
David.
Of the girls in Bells Are Ringing. You were like the ones that sang about Suzanne Cerfone. Do you remember that?
I do.
Oh,
I do.
My Lord, I forgot that.
And that was about the time you were.
No, Bells Are Ringing. I never did.
No,
I was never in Bells
she was
Are Ringing.
In pajama
that was that
game.
Other girl.
No, you were in
Damn Yankees
and Roar the Grease Paint, Smell the Crowd.
You were in
she
Damn
was
Yankees?
Urchin.
I was in Damn Yankees.
Yeah,
I don't remember that.
I was
See,
in like
quickly
seventh
they forget.
Grade or something like that.
I wasn't
eighth
around.
Grade?
You weren't
John
around?
John wasn't born yet.
No, I was.
Okay. Well, maybe a jumping off point is, do you develop a character, do you take the time and trouble and energy to develop a character if you're doing two lines and walking across the stage as opposed to if you have a major role?
I think it depends on what the character is that's walking across the stage. You know, you have... sometimes, you don't necessarily have to do a huge amount of preparation, but you certainly have to think about, you know, how does the character walk across the stage? What does it look like? I mean, you just have to have some kind of an idea of who you're supposed to be. You know, if you're a bum on the street, then you have to develop, you know, bum-like tendencies. That's right. Or you can if you're just, you know, shopping in Manhattan and you're just sort of going across, you have to think about how that looks, right? Yeah. I believe yes, completely yes.
I mean, every person who walks onto the stage is a character, and it helps to layer the reality of the show if each person really understands who they are and what their task is. And I mean, how many times have we gone to see for example, a large cast musical, and the actors just walk out on stage and they have no purpose, you know what? And it's, you know, as a director, it's my job to make sure that each person who walks on stage understands why they're walking on stage and what they're doing. And some people just have an innate sense to do it. And you know, for example, I'm walking down a street in New York, I'm with my husband and I'm shopping, go. And I'm a tourist. And then they start adding little layers onto that. But some people don't have that sense of how to do that. And then it's our job to help them to figure out who they are, even if they don't have any lines. Because if they walk out on stage and the audience can actually tell what they're doing and who they are, even if they don't have a line, then that character has added another layer or another facet to the performance.
Right, yeah. I mean, even if that person is adding to the environment, You know what I mean?
Right.
As opposed to being, you know, I don't mean like their scenery, but they do add to the environment.
Exactly.
You know,
well, it's really important that every single character in a play know that they are just as important to the whole as the person that has the lead in the play or tons and tons of dialogue, however you want to put it. And that's what makes a cohesive, really exciting theatrical experience is when everybody is part of a really well-oiled machine and nobody feels less important to moving the plot or the action forward than the person that's getting, you know, all the attention mm-hmm. because they're standing on stage talking a lot. It's
right.
just as important, and you can really, like you said, you can really tell when somebody doesn't know what they're doing or doesn't know why they're there.
Right.
And even if you aren't aware that that's why the play feels weak, you know, you can certainly tell from any kind of theatrical experience when the smaller roles feel like they have purpose and are connected or not. It's like a glaring mm-hmm. beacon to anyone in the audience.
Is it a director problem? I mean, if the director is not noticing that that's going on, isn't that his or
yes.
her issue to try to
totally.
Correct?
Totally.
Yeah.
I've done productions, but I mean, I think last week we were talking about the Scottish play Macbeth, and as an example, I'll give. When I did that production at the Old Globe, we had a wonderful director named Paul Mullins, and he from day one would all of us had to create complete character bios, come up with our names, which we all thought was corny at first, but, you know, there's a lot of historical research on that play, which makes it kind of fun. I actually did historical research on Lady Macbeth and found out that her real name was Groch.
Was what?
Groch.
Oh, good.
It's a Scottish name, so you have...
yeah.
And other people, you know, so then... But it was a large cast. It was a huge company, and the spear carriers would come in and they would have their names made up. And through the entire rehearsal process, I mean, you know, the play opens with a huge battle. And the director would call each individual actor by the name they brought in that day. And, you know, we did lots of viewpoints work, which is a physical way of working. And we did viewpoints for a week and a half straight before we ever picked up the script. And all of the smaller roles in that production were so connected and felt so important to the whole play that it wound up energizing the entire piece. And what didn't just come alive when the guy playing Macbeth came on, or, you know, those famous scenes that everybody mm-hmm. knows about, the mad scene, so to get back to your original question, I completely agree that it's the director's yeah. job to make everyone feel connected and important and to pay attention as to when people aren't feeling engaged, because that's usually what it is. They, you know, they're very eager to feel comfortable and important.
I've done the bio thing. We did yeah. the bio thing once.
We do it every once in a while.
Yeah.
Depends
it's
on
not
the
a
show.
Bad idea.
Yeah, it depends
not
on the show.
Several years ago, we had a director that insisted that you come in with a bio for your character mm-hmm. and then...
It depends on the production,
yeah,
you know.
Right. Well, for example, what about a production where you have four or six people and they're all playing different characters in different scenes? Is it important that they work up a background on every single character they're playing?
Well, I wouldn't speak for any actor, because some actors in your play might think that they have to do that in order for them to make their scene effective. Personally, I wouldn't do it. Maybe I'm lazy.
No, well,
I mean, you know, generally a piece of that nature
yeah.
is not as in-depth, because you're only living with the characters. I mean, I don't mean to discount it, but you're not living with the characters for 2.5 hours. You're sort of, each character has its own function in terms of the piece as a whole, and it's not as crucial, perhaps, that, you know, one have a large back history. But if somebody in a cast of four or six feels like that's what they need to do for themselves to make their time on stage comfortable and make it make sense to them, then by all means, they should.
So it's really a matter of thinking about the function of the the functionality of the character. What is the character there to do in terms of moving the action forward or whatever?
I think that's something that the director has to look at. I know as an actor, you can't play that. That's not an active thing. I mean, it's maybe good to know, just and then forget about once you're on the stage. Once you're on the stage, you know, you trust that all that research is there, and you have to just play the scene. You know, That's nothing that an actor should walk on stage worrying about, because it's really not their problem.
I often, you know, it's to create a character, the director needs, we've talked about this in the past episodes as well, that the director needs to have a clear sight line, a clear view of where he wants these characters to go. Then that can be added with the actor's idea, which then starts to be the creative process. And then it's the actor's job to make sure that they're continuing to ask questions of themselves and of the director, so that they know that they're kind of fitting into that, into what's expected. And the more you know the character, if you've done a character bio, especially in, I think it really works well in plays, character biographies and in-depth character studies do. But the more you know the character, then the more questions you can ask, which start to make you know the character even more. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times I think actors are afraid to ask questions about character. And I think sometimes directors are afraid to take questions about character because the director may not necessarily know as well as they should where the characters need to be going. So the director needs to come to the process knowing pretty much who those characters are and how he feels about them, and then the actors need to do that same thing, and then that's where the creative process.
Well, how much of that is discovery together as you go along? I mean, director can't. Yeah. Does the director really have to know every? I mean, doesn't? I mean,
oh, I'm not saying
understand the character,
but
I mean, you know, I'll tell you as a director, actors surprise me all the time with stuff that I hadn't thought about, and so you say, oh, okay, you know, that actually works, you know, and you didn't really think of one character as being necessarily all that funny from, you know, and maybe they are, or maybe they're more, maybe there's a totally different relationship there that hadn't really been obvious until it actually got on the stage. So, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, no, that means you've done your job, because the director's function is to set up really solid parameters and make sure the actors know that they're safe and where they're moving. And, you know, the given set of circumstances is your given circumstances. Those are the facts that the actor comes in with. But when they can surprise you, it means that everybody's doing your job. That's the creative process, actors surprise themselves and you know, surprise each other. And that's what's exciting about any rehearsal process.
But I think you have to also allow them to do that if they can. Now, I've worked with some actors that when they walk into the first reading, pretty much, that's what you're going to get at the end. They just don't seem to be able, even if you're trying to guide them that way, to get outside of themselves and into a different character.
I had one actress that I tried. It was just a beginning actress. And I told her, you have to say this line. I want you to come back tomorrow with 20 different ways to say that line. Because it was, and I won't say her name, but the thing, and she came back with one way to say the line. And I would say, no, say it this way. I would actually, you know, say, okay, put the emphasis on a different word. Could not do it.
Okay, perhaps this person wasn't a naturally gifted actor.
Well, maybe that's the problem. Well, I don't think she could hear. And it was, but you know, right. But that's what you run into in community theater, obviously.
You also run into the danger of being really, really tempted to line read to actors when you know how you want the line to sound in their head because of the situation, and they just don't get it.
Right.
So then what do you do? I mean, I just kind of have to figure that no matter how many times you line read, if you line read to somebody, what they're going to do is what they're going to do. So you have to kind of adjust to make that the best that it can be.
Mm-hmm. Line reading is sort of a big, maybe, I don't know if you do. That's sort of like you don't line read to people.
Well, you don't line read to people, but lots of times in community theater, I know, but if they're going so far off
track. I do it sometimes, but I don't do it very – I really try to avoid it.
In the professional world, that would be – you don't do that.
I've had a problem with line reading. I had an actress a long time ago who could not say a word correctly. And it wasn't, so it's not really so much line reading. It's just that it's this word, you're not saying this word right. You're not saying this word right.
She wasn't pronouncing it properly?
Correct. Oh. And it's like, come on, you know, this is the way you say this. This is the way you say this.
That's different. And,
well, but you know what? But see, I have seen this actually occur in a show that I was in where the director did line read the main actress. We actually had a rehearsal, a 3-hour rehearsal where the director line read the actress every line.
Oh, my Lord.
And the creative process for that actress completely disappeared. And what happened for this particular actress that I kept going, you're not saying the line right. You're not saying the word right. It's just I finally changed the word because I had her so upset about that word that she was never going to get it right. I can't remember. It was actually in Beau Geste. And really? She did a really nice job for me. It was just that one word, and it was the name of a town, and now I can't even remember what it was.
Schenectady
Milwaukee.
Or something.
She couldn't say Milwaukee.
Oh, you're
kidding.
She would say Milwaukee. And it's like, no, it's Milwaukee. Milwaukee. She could never hear it in her head. And so finally That's we changed funny. It to the Goodman. Because we were saying the Milwaukee rep. And she was Milwaukee rep. And it's like, no, it's the Mil. And finally it was, let's just change it to the Goodman.
Yeah.
Because it took place in Chicago and she could say the Goodman. So, so we were all good after that. So,
jeez.
But yeah, I mean, you can really create a major schism in an actor or actress's brain by line reading. It's terrible. Which also doesn't help to develop a character either.
No, it's very on the surface. And
you're saying though that, you know, line reading to an actor can dissolve their creative or their, you know, their development process.
It
but
can.
Of course you have to determine whether there's a process there in the first place.
That's true.
And that sometimes there isn't one. but I don't know. I don't line read. I had one actor actually sort of like say, oh, you're giving me a line reading. And but I've
asked for line readings.
I think
if you ask for them, it's okay.
I do it on very rare occasions. Most community theater actors won't really ask you for it.
Oh, I have though. And it's like usually, how do you want me to say the line?
That sounds familiar.
Oh.
No, but I do. I would ask for a line reading. If the director's obviously not getting what they want, then I just, it's like,
usually,
well, what do you want?
Usually
do you want
when I've asked it, I've worked with a lot of playwrights on new plays. Oh. And so sometimes if you don't understand, if something isn't making sense, you know, you can either ask for the line to be changed or you can suggest, can I say this? Or you can say, I have no idea how to say this. So.
Well, some of my favorite character development has been in historical characters as well. And that's just so nice because you've got a library of information that you can go to do some research. So at least you can find out a little bit about the person, who they were, what their backgrounds were, what their relationships were. Anything that you need to find out, usually you can. So that kind of helps to really layer facets. Kind of like finding out that Lady Macbeth's name is really
Grock.
Oh, Grock.
Grock or something.
But, I mean,
but it was awful being called Grock for 6 weeks.
But you know
weeks.
What? It kind of adds a different level, though. At least, I mean, you know something about her that how many of us never knew that her name was...
Well, now we know.
Grock Macbeth.
And that was the queen's name.
Yeah, so like playing
6 months of rap, I had to go by Grock.
Playing the world's tallest George M. Cohan in history.
Oh, yeah, you were.
But I had a lot of research I could go by there. Playing Will Rogers, playing
who was tall?
Robert Falcon Scott when I did Terra Nova.
Oh.
I've been able, and those characters have been really helpful to me. And then, of course, there's method acting as well, which I don't know if method acting is the right word, but sometimes I historical characters I have gotten too close to. Have you ever done that? Gotten too close to a character?
No.
Really? I was depressed for 6 months after producing Terra Nova.
I've done plays that were very, very difficult to do when I did How I Learned to Drive, which has, you know, very sensitive subject matter. It was very... I don't know if it's getting too close to a character because... I'm not sure about that, but you know, 8 shows a week of never leaving the stage is exhausting, and very sort of, you know, depleting subject matter.
Well, is it, you know, do you get to a character that's a lot like yourself and maybe a lot like this part of yourself that you don't particularly like or something? Too, that's another possibility, I suppose. What, say for a comedy role, I mean, if you were going to be Felix in The Odd Couple, how would you approach that to start with? I mean, what would be like a standard process there?
Gee, Marcia, how would you approach playing Felix in The Odd Couple?
How would I approach it? Very funny. Yeah, and the...
Well, I mean, would you start with a bio for a character that's on stage?
I don't
stage
know if I'd start
long?
There yet. I mean, I always start inside the script. I mean, I let the script kind of tell me about the character up front. And because this, I mean, it's but everything in, that you kind of need to know can come from the script sometimes. I mean...
But something like that is—it's written in such broad strokes. You'd have to be half dead not to know what Felix was like.
Well, you mean specific strokes?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very iconic to a play like that. Right. Everyone has seen the television series. I mean, that I know you just threw that one out as an example, but lots of plays that are worked on in community theater, I think, are probably plays that people are familiar with. More, not
yes,
a lot of new plays.
You know they yeah, are. Yeah.
Not
yeah.
a lot of new no. things, but maybe they're, you know, I don't know if, I'm very impressed with what people do because they don't have 8 hours a day, 6 days a week to work. I mean, right. I am been very impressed going to the community theater rehearsals that I have been going to in the past couple of weeks where people come in. Two or 3 hours a night, 3 days a week or 4 days a week, and then they're creating their whole world in that tiny amount of time, and I think how are they doing that, because it seems impossible mm-hmm. to not have 8 hours a day, 6 days a week to get your play together. I don't understand it.
Well,
it's very impressive.
When you've done say a Law and Order type of part where you're you know like a victim or I'm trying to remember there was one where you were a battered mom yeah. or something like that.
The closer, honey.
Oh,
she called me and she said, I said, Dito, what's the matter? She said, I've been crying all day long.
I had to cry for like 12 hours every day on that. Every scene was crying, and you have to do many, many, many takes.
Right, yeah, but how much screen time was that ultimately?
A lot. That was a big episode.
On that big episode? Okay, I was trying to think of somewhere where you've been, you know, maybe a shorter period of time. How do you prepare? I mean, well, how do you prepare for that? Say where you're like a district.
It's a lot easier in television because you are hired to be yourself, really. I mean, that doesn't mean you don't need acting skill.
Right.
But you're not going to play a 60-year-old woman or somebody that, you know... you're going to play pretty close to type. And so also in television, it's sort of understood that you do exactly what you did in the audition. And pretty much stuff that I do is very straightforward. It's a lot of, you know, I'm hired as the person that can tackle a lot of language and that can cry on cue and that... It's in my wheelhouse, pretty much.
Yeah.
So, because television is pretty much run by money, and you have to be able to do your job exactly when the scene is being shot in the amount of time. So, you know, if you can do it in one take, great. And you have to do that.
You've saved them some money.
You have to do that take over and over. I'm not saying that there's not, you know, that it's not pleasurable or anything, but it is more by the numbers than doing a play, certainly, because you are putting together this hour piece of television over the course of 8 really long days.
Okay.
You know, your call is 5 or 6 in the morning, and you get done at, you know, 8 or 9 that night. Or whatever the time frame may be, it's always a very, very long day, and it's all done out of order and... different scenes.
Oh, and it looks so easy.
Oh, yeah.
What now? Is that true? Even for like a part where you're doing like the recurring character of Rhonda Perlman on The Wire, You got to live with that character for 5 years. Now, do you get to develop? I mean, is the preparation change over that period of time, or how does that work?
No, it's actually much easier when you're doing a show like that because, well, A, the writing on that show was really, really good, so you just, you're very taken care of in that way. I've done some television where the writing was so terrible. You couldn't keep it in your head, let alone try to do anything with it, you know. Excuse me. So The Wire was very easy because you'd get the script every week and say, oh, what's going to happen to me this week? And, you know, it was years. I mean, it was only 12 episodes in a season, but it was very much a comfortable thing to do. And not
by the way, folks, Comcast is running season one on demand right now. So
really?
You can start at the beginning and start watching that show and see how it goes. But you weren't, I don't know, I watched the first episode the other day. I don't know if you were actually in the first episode.
I was. I had like four lines.
Okay. And oh, really, that's right. I remember.
I was young.
I remember. You were young?
Yeah.
You still look just
as
good.
I was young. It was 10
You still look
years
great.
Ago.
It was it?
Yeah.
Really? 10 years ago?
10 years ago when we did the pilot, yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. I just had four lines and came in. My character wasn't supposed to be a regular.
You were in The Office, but you were on the main character.
Yeah.
Well, you were on the main credits.
They made me a regular.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, because you got to do more later on in the season as it developed, too. So, it was a good show. It's a good show. I had a hard time with the slang language,
yeah, it's very difficult.
Especially in the first season. It was like, oh my God, what are they saying? But yeah. Cause a lot of street language in the show related to drug deals and stuff like that. But I've started over, kind of knowing kind of where it's going, and it's a fun thing to watch. So anyway, that's our plug for this show. So anyway, that's all we have time for this episode of Theater Geeks. Please go to theatergeeks.com and use our feedback form to tell us exactly what you'd like to hear us talk about on Theater Geeks. Also check out the Theater Geeks store where you can pick up all your Theater Geek gear like hats, cups, mugs, and other great Theater Geek stuff.
I want a hat.
You want a hat?
We'll get a hat.
We gotta get some hats.
Oh,
that's
boy.
Right. We don't have any. We're not wearing hats today.
We're not wearing hats.
Okay.
It's anyway, not a hat day.
That's good.
Is
I'm Dave.
Geeky enough for a hat?
Geeky enough for a hat.
That's right. I'm trying to close the show here.
Sorry,
I'm Dave Dufour.
I'm John Schaup.
And I'm Marcia Fulmer. And we are Theater Geeks.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Theater Geeks. If you have a suggestion for a topic that you'd like to hear us discuss, or just a question, or just a comment, use our feedback form at theatergeeks.com. Music for Theater Geeks was provided by musicalley.com.